This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Wednesday, November 27th. Even on this day before Thanksgiving, there are two new reported facts in the Trump-Ukraine story that could prove to be significant. And since we spoke yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee has scheduled its first impeachment hearing for next Wednesday at 10 a.m., guess where we'll be, and invited the president himself to testify. Here are the new reported facts. Then we'll talk to our guest for today, Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, who opposes impeachment. Fact number one. According to the New York Times, quoting two unnamed sources, President Trump knew about the CIA whistleblower complaint before Trump released the military aid. The Times said Trump was informed in August about the whistleblower from the CIA. The aid was released in September. This would also mean Trump knew about the whistleblower before he seemed to change his tune to Ambassador Gordon Sondland and told him not to ask Ukraine for a quid pro quo. In a phone call before Trump knew about the whistleblower, Trump told Sondland to require an announcement of investigations for a White House meeting. This new timeline would add weight to the argument that Trump released the aid and nuanced his language only because he now saw he might get called out publicly. Fact number two, there's apparently an email, so that would be documentary evidence, showing that the president himself ordered the military aid frozen. This revelation comes from the release of the first deposition transcript, I should say the final deposition transcript, that the House Impeachment Inquiry Committees heard privately before the public hearings. The witness was Mark Sandy, an official at the Office of Management and Budget. Sandy testified that he received an email on July 12th informing him that the president himself was directing a hold on military funding for Ukraine. The email came from Robert Blair, a top aide to White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. Now, this is the most direct evidence yet that the president personally ordered the aid withheld. And according to Sandy, no one gave him or other people at the budget office a reason for the hold. And he testified that one colleague of his resigned in September after giving a dissenting opinion on whether it was legal to withhold the aid, and another colleague resigned in September after expressing frustrations about not understanding the reason for the hold. With that, we welcome Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. His latest article out yesterday is called The Check the Box Impeachment, a Partisan Impeachment Pursued on a Political Timetable. He is also author of the new book, The Case for Nationalism, How It Made Us Powerful, United, and Free. Rich, we always appreciate it. Thanks for coming on again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We'll get to those two new facts and get your reactions, but let's start with the news that the Judiciary Committee, which would vote on actual articles of impeachment, will hold its first impeachment hearing next Wednesday, taking the handoff from Adam Schiff and the Intelligence Committee. Does that play into your assertion that they're running on a political timetable?
Yeah, they want to get this out of the door by the end of the year. So you'll have a hearing with some constitutional experts, and then in fairly short order, the draft of articles of impeachment, and then I expect, unless there's some earth-shattering development, for them to be voted out of the House, and then Trump will be acquitted in the Senate. And so it goes.
You're arguing that if the Democrats were interested in learning the whole story rather than getting this done before election season, they would go through the court battles to force the testimony of the closest people to Trump who really know if he was blackmailing Ukraine by withholding the military aid. You name Giuliani, Mulvaney, Secretary of State Pompeo, and Vice President Pence. I guess we could add John Bolton. Why do you think they should fight those battles for months in court?
Well, if they're really doing this prayerfully and sadly, and as Pelosi and Schiff had repeatedly said, in pursuit of all the facts to get them before the American public, then you would not care. You know, the Iowa caucuses are coming up on February 6th. You wouldn't care that, you know, this might be distracting from other business. You would wait and get all the firsthand witnesses. It's just very, very strange to undertake an investigation and not get all the people who really know stuff on a first-hand basis, and it would be a pain, you know, would be a delay. But I imagine the courts would expedite it. I don't think the Democrats would prevail with all these witnesses, by the way. I do think there's a colorable and probably credible privilege claims with some of these witnesses, not all of them. So you'd have a more complete factual record. So this is the first time we've ever had an impeachment where there hasn't even been an attempt to create a complete factual record, which would seem a very basic imperative, because they're in a rush.
You've argued previously that what the president did was wrong, but the Democrats should not impeach in an election year, and you were just making that case again. Let the American people be the jury. Here's an argument against that from yesterday's show. It comes from former Obama Solicitor General Neil Katyal, who has now written a book making the case for impeachment. And I asked him specifically about that argument from you. I quoted from your New York Post article this week, why now when the American people are going to get to decide themselves in a few months? And he responded in part like this.
It might be one thing if after the president got caught with Ukraine, he said, yeah, you know what? I made a mistake, a really bad mistake. And I definitely won't, you know, try and seek foreign interference in elections. I won't try and cheat, all that stuff. But what did he do instead? He said, yeah, I'd do it again. China, if you're listening, can you help me out with the Bidens? So we know this is going to happen again. And this is why this Republican talking point, which is, oh, let's just wait till the 2020 election, I think has it so backwards. I mean, the president is accused of cheating in the 2020 election. So to wait for the election in which he's cheating is bizarre. It's kind of like if Brian and I are playing a game of Monopoly and he accuses me of cheating and I say, well, let's figure out whether I'm really cheating. Let's play a game of Monopoly. You don't play the same game you're accused of cheating in order to resolve those accusations against you.
Neil Katyal on yesterday's show, responding to what you wrote in the New York Post this week. Want to keep that conversation going?
I just contend the punishment is dependent on the harm, at least to some extent, and there's no harm here. The Ukrainians didn't dig up dirt, quote unquote, on Joe Biden. They didn't even investigate Burisma, a shady company that perhaps legitimately deserves investigation. They didn't even announce they were investigating Burisma. And even if they had, the political effect on the American election would have been zero. You know, it's not as though Joe Biden's polls would have plummeted, not as though Hunter Biden would have been led away in chains. The effect would have been basically non-existent. So that we're going to do kind of political capital punishment here, and for the first time in our history, remove a president over this, I just think can't be sustained. And Democrats are trying to build this massive superstructure of impeachment and removal atop a very, very narrow base in this Ukraine episode.
I guess the Democrats see the base of complaints against the president as much broader. Let me try to put that into words and see how you would react to that. That Trump has done so many things that they consider impeachable, including asking a foreign government for help with his campaign by itself, completely unbowed in that respect by the Russia investigation. That's one thing. The alleged conditioning of military aid on that is another. Plus all the attempts to obstruct justice in both this and the Russia investigation. And many Republicans even see the military aid problem, which would have gone on, presumably, if Trump had not gotten called out and if Zelensky really didn't announce those investigations, that aid suspension would have become permanent. Even many Republicans see that military aid problem as against the national security interest of the United States. He was toying with the national security interest of the United States, adding to the list of things that he's done that seem to advance Russian interests over American ones in really important ways. So that is maybe roughly how the Democrats would put why this all adds up to a combination of serious abuses of power for his personal gain that Congress needs to set a precedent on, lest they enable even more of a strongman presidency as they'd see it, and maybe even a Kremlin-linked one. So what about that, put that way?
Well, I reject some of the premises there, like Kremlin-backed White House and all that. But
okay, take that
I
one
think
out.
The best case, I think the best case Democrats can make is, look, Republicans impeached Bill Clinton in 1998 with zero hope of realistic hope of removing him in the Senate as an act of censure, basically, with a lot of bells and whistles. And we're going to do the same thing here. You know, turnabout is fair play. And because Trump, because his episode was bad, and because, you know, Trump doesn't separate himself personally enough from the institution of the office, it's important to create this black mark on his record, which is basically a censure vote. I think that's their best case. I think cutting against that is he's going to get acquitted, and it's going to play like a victory. You know, he's going to have a parade on the South Lawn, you know, maybe a flyover or something when he prevails.
Right. That's just a Democrats' political calculation, that one.
Yeah, so that vitiates. And then what's it do really to the impeachment power at the end of the day if he's been impeached and reelected, which is there's some significant chance of that happening here.
But then I guess a question for you is, if public opinion doesn't change, Republican senators will not vote to remove him because they'll fear backlash from their constituents, and we would get that outcome that you just articulated. He might wind up getting impeached and reelected. You say that would weaken the power of impeachment for the future, maybe. But which side of history do you want to be on? Helping to freeze public opinion where it is by worrying about that outcome, or helping convince people that what I think you already believe was wrong and a significant abuse of power, correct that if it's wrong, shouldn't be let to slide?
Yeah, so your listeners probably think this is so-called concern trolling on my part, because obviously I don't have the interests of the Democrats at heart. But you know, this goes back to how do you hold them accountable? And I think hearings, you know, the 2 weeks of public hearings were really strong for the Democrats. I think it's impeachment and removal that goes too far. And you know, the polling's ticked up a little bit in some of these polls that we've seen a spate of in the last couple of days, you know, maybe 2 points. But, you know, if it's 49-46 on impeachment nationally, where is it in the swing districts of vulnerable congressional Democrats? Where is it in places like Wisconsin, you know, that are the real battlegrounds? It may not hurt them. It's certainly not helping them. And it very well may hurt them at the margins.
So now let's get to the news stories from last night, after your article was published in National Review yesterday. If OMB official Mark Sandy told the truth in his deposition, there's an email from Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney's office on July 12th saying the president directed the aid be withheld. That would be documentary evidence. And that's 2 days after the meeting with Ukrainian officials that John Bolton called the drug deal for trying to leverage investigations. Would this email change anything for you in terms of proof?
No, because I always assumed that this was the case. I mean, it creates more of a documentary record, yes. But if Trump didn't order the aid withheld, I don't know who would have. And there was a story 2 weeks or so ago in the New York Times about how some Republicans were trying to cook up a theory where it could all be blamed on Sondland and Giuliani, you know, somehow working behind the president's back. And that's obviously crazy, you know. And if he didn't hold up the aid, who did? You know, he must have done it. And he obviously did it in part, perhaps large part, to pressure Ukrainians over the investigation. So I just take that as a given.
And the other news story, President Trump reportedly was told by White House lawyers about the CIA whistleblower complaint before the aid was released. This would add weight to the argument that Trump released the aid only because he now saw he might get called out publicly. Meaningful to you in terms of further proof of Trump linking all these things?
Well, I think we need to know more about this. And this is one, you know, my first answer, Brian, on the morning's news is, we kind of knew that, or at least we could have intuited it. This is something we don't know the details of. What were the exact circumstances of the release, and how was it released? So this is interesting, you know, piece of new information. It seems to me, though, and I'm happy to be corrected, you know, as more facts emerge, that the most salient thing here was the House is going to pass a continuing resolution forcing the release of the funding, and it was likely going to pass the Senate. And we know Rob Portman on September 11th, when the funding was actually released, called the White House and basically said, you know, the game is up. We're going to force you to release this money. And Trump released it. So what was a mix of these various motivations, you know, worry perhaps about the whistleblower complaint or just having his hand forced by Congress? We need to know more. But it's not as simple as some people are portraying. Oh, you know, he saw the whistleblower complaint in August or learned of it and then immediately released the aid. Well, he didn't release it for another 2 weeks. And the more immediate, the timing lines up more immediately with this congressional action in mid-September. Sorry.
Sherry, you're on the air with Rich Lowry. Hi, Sherry.
Oh, hello, Brian. I want to know where people stand. I think for history, we need to know where representatives and senators stand, whether Trump is impeached and removed from office or not. History will not be on the side of the Republicans. Rich was talking about history, looking at the Democrats and saying, oh, they were in too much of a hurry to impeach somebody they didn't like and, you know, and remove him from office. I think that history will say, what happened to the Republicans? Why did they think that it's okay for somebody to issue bribes? Why did they think it's okay for the president to ask for help from foreign entities to win an election? Why did they think it's okay for the president to make money from the presidency for his businesses?
And Sherry, I'm going to leave it that. At that. React to whatever you want to react to there, Rich.
Yes, I don't accept, you know, all the factual basis of what she's saying about Trump. But I do think Republicans are not serving themselves well right now or in the future if they don't just fully admit what happened here and that it was wrong and say it was wrong. And just because something is wrong doesn't mean you should be impeached and removed over it. But just because you shouldn't be impeached and removed over it doesn't make it right. And that's a point I've been trying to make throughout this episode.
Do you think that there's a danger in him being reelected despite the people knowing about this abuse of power and the things that go with it? You know, these countries that have been moving toward real authoritarian rule sometimes are doing so with the support of the majority of the people. We could name a number of countries, maybe even Russia and Putin. And so it's a dangerous thing if he does abuse his power and the Congress doesn't remove him. And that is acceptable to the American people for the slope that may send us sliding on. How much, if any, concern do you have about that?
Well, I think, one, in general, the proverbial guardrails have held, through these first 3.5 years. It's often been, you know, erratic and willful governance, but not illegal or unconstitutional governance. You know, a great example of this would be his intervention in these military justice cases, and specifically the really extraordinary intervention to say that Eddie Gallagher, this Navy SEAL, shouldn't lose his SEAL pin, and there shouldn't be a panel convened to consider whether he should keep his SEAL pin or not. He has the authority to do that. I mean, there's just no question he's commander-in-chief. It's just a really poor use of his authority. And so I think most of what Trump has done that's objectionable in my mind falls in that category rather than, you know, violating the Constitution. I think there's a tendency of people who are freaked out by things he does, you know, like calling the press the enemy of the people, which he absolutely shouldn't. There's a leap to say, well, he's violating the First Amendment when he does that. No, he's exercising his own First Amendment rights. So
I'll bet some people listening right now are wondering, why are you using the Navy SEAL case as an example of the guardrails holding rather than the guardrails collapsing? Let me play a short clip that I was going to ask you about anyway from the president's rally last night in Florida. This is part of how he referred to that case.
I stuck up for three great warriors against the deep state. And you know what I'm talking about.
So he's now calling his own Navy secretary, presumably, and the peer review process that is the pride of the military court-martial system, the deep state. Is that the guardrails holding, or is that the guardrails not holding, even though clearly you're right, we have civilian control of the military, he's got the constitutional power to do what he did, but is that the guardrails of norms that are going to protect the country in the long run holding or collapsing?
Yeah, so I think you make a good point. That's not, I was kind of mixing things up there. That's not a good example. The guardrails holding for the reason that you outlined. It is a case where he's clearly within his legal authority. And conservative constitutionalists that I know, what kind of the way we think about this, you know, we're worried about Trump. But you look at Elizabeth Warren, she's promising to ban fracking, like her first day in office, when there's a 2005 law that says you can't, she can't do that. She's promising a wealth tax that at least is very constitutionally dubious. She's promising to break up the tech companies on no authority whatsoever. So, you know, our fear is that there's a progressive movement that considers the Constitution a needless obstacle or an anachronism, and has always been about aggrandizing executive power, especially within the administrative agencies. And that is more of a long-term threat to our institutions and our constitutional order than a president who's using his lawful authority in sometimes very unwise ways.
Last thing. You've written critically in the past about Rudy Giuliani. Let me get your reaction to this that he said this weekend on Fox.
I've seen things written like, he's going to throw me under the bus.
Right.
When they say that, I say, he isn't, but I have insurance.
Is Rudy threatening the president when he says, I have insurance, asked if the president is going to throw him under the bus? What do you make of that?
It's crazy. Now, Rudy says he's joking, but what kind of joke is that? And if it's not a joke, it's, if it's one of these sort of joking, not joking things, it's the president's lawyer threatening the president implicitly in public. And it's just bizarre. And look, the President Trump, he's responsible for his personnel choices. He's responsible for his decisions. But Rudy has a lot to answer here for. He helped lead him down this cockamamie path in Ukraine and may have been doing it, you know, for self-interested reasons. And there's still a lot under the Rudy rock that we don't know about, and that I think is probably going to really end badly.
Rich Lowry, editor of National Review and author of The Case for Nationalism, How It Made Us Powerful, United, and Free. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I want to give thanks to the producers who make this show possible. I call them the Z Team, Zoe Azoulay and Zach Cohen. The Z-Team rocks and makes this podcast listenable and intelligible. We will take Thanksgiving Day off, and on Friday, we'll feed a special edition. We'll get off the impeachment news for the holiday weekend and send you a national call-in show that I hosted on Sunday called America, Are You Ready? It's on the place of impeachment in our democracy. So happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Lehrer.